Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome to the Amateur Otaku Podcast. How is everybody doing out there? I am Brandon Alvarado, the Scarlet Fan here, and I'm excited to be back here tonight, live at the Amateur Otaku Show, talking Bleach, the Thousand-Year Blood War. How is everybody doing out there? As usual, I'm not doing this by myself. I am accompanied by the one, the only, the man, Isaac Wolf. What is up, man?
Get your attention.
Yes.
I love this show.
Yes. It's a good show to love. I love this show too. And it's funny because this is one of those shows, before we go into the housekeeping stuff, this is one of those shows that you've been talking about for forever. And I've been wanting to get caught up forever, but I just fell off. And you would kept telling me, Brandon, you got to get caught up. You got to get caught up. And then I bit the bullet and I said, you know what? I'm not going to get caught up. It's too many episodes. I'm just going to watch it on a day-by-day basis. And I'm going to say, you know what? I may not know the whole story, but I think I'll be able to enjoy the show as it is. And lo and behold, this show was so amazing that I'm 100% caught up with the manga. I know the entirety of the story of Bleach now because I wanted to understand everything that was happening, everything that was occurring, and everything that's coming. Now, I have not read anything beyond what's going on in the anime right now because I kind of want the anime to surprise me. It may be when, now that we're on break with Bleach, the Thousand Year Blood War, I may jump into the manga and finish it so that I'm more prepared for the discussions when we talk about Core 2 in July, I think is when Core 2 comes out.
Yeah, and I can't wait. I'm just so... We just have to wait a couple of months. Yes.
But we are very excited to be back here talking Bleach, the Thousand Year Blood War, Core 1 finale. If you guys love what we do here at the Amateur Otaku Podcast and you want to listen to us talk about Chainsaw Man, Nier Automata, My Hero Academia, Vinland Saga, all different animes that are coming out that we're interested in covering, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, click on that like button, and click on the bell for notifications so you do not miss any single stream, any single episode. And you can also go to our archive and see what we've covered in the past because we have a lot of stuff that we've covered that we would love you to see. We've covered movies. We've covered anime series. We've done manga. There's a lot of stuff coming and a lot of stuff that we've done that we want to make sure that you don't miss any of it. So make sure you subscribe, click on the bell icon, click on the like button. If you'd rather listen to us on the go to our podcast channel. We're available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Radio Public. Wherever podcasts are found, you can find the Amateur Otaku Podcast. The only person that plays is Podbean, but don't worry about it. You can find us on everywhere else where everybody else listens to podcasts. You can find the Amateur Otaku. Now, Isaac, we have a total of not one, not two, but four episodes of Bleach to cover. Because when they made the decision to wrap up the core, they gave us, Isaac, two 1-hour specials. They gave us episodes 10 and 11 1 week, and then the week after, we got episodes 12 and 13. And they made them events, and oh boy, I'm really glad that they did that.
Bleach
it was awesome.
Is perfect. Bleach are perfect for making events for...
Yep.
You might have noticed that I am, while I do love some of the other shows we have talked about, I'm more... Bleach is the one I'm most excited about when we talk about it.
Well, I mean, you've been waiting for this for so long, and I understand it now. Because the fact that the book, I mean, the Bleach book, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to talk about this incorrectly, but when exactly did the Bleach manga end?
I can't recall that, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, the Bleach manga has been over for almost 6 years now. Almost going on seven. And whenever the Bleach manga ended, a lot of people I were pretty confident were expecting for the actual anime to follow up. But the anime did not follow up with Bleach. The anime ended at the Fullbright arc, which is the second to last arc. And it's so funny because I actually read the manga. I didn't see the Fullbright arc, but I kind of watched a couple of episodes just to get a feel of what the animation was and stuff like that. And I really get to appreciate how much the animation got better beyond when Bleach started. And I was able to appreciate also how amazing it's gotten in today's standards with the release of Thousand Year Blood War. But as soon as the Lost Asian arc ends, which is where Fullbring was introduced, the last pages of that last chapter from that arc literally say, next up, final arc, the Thousand Year Blood War. Like, they don't waste any time in telling you that the next arc is the last one. So all the manga readers read the last arc, and I'm pretty confident they were all craving for more Bleach, and we never got it. Until now. And I'm so happy. I'm kind of very happy that we waited till now, because the quality of the animation, the care, the direction, the pacing has been superb. It's been so great.
It's shown that Pirot has taken their time for a good reason when it comes to this show. It's not something that they half-assed this time. I love the previous, the earlier anime to some extent, but that some of the animation there is the fact that they reused the last 10 minutes of the former episode as the first 10 minutes in the previous episode, in the next episode, is just well, that's why people talked about maybe we could get a reboot, but I am totally fine with this, because they have nailed it completely.
Yeah, everything's been so good. I mean, I've been very satisfied with all the Bleach that I've been getting, and I can't wait to start talking about it. So let's just dive in. We're going to talk about all four episodes that pretty much make up the finale. Episode 10, The Battle. Episode 11, Everything But the Rain. Episode 12, Everything But the Rain, June Truth. And episode 13, The Blade Is Me. Now, a lot happens in the last couple of episodes. Let's do a little bit of a recap of where we were when before these episodes aired. We know for a fact that Ichigo and Renji, whose Sanpakutos were utterly destroyed in the last fight against the Quincy's, are up there with the Soul Kingdom or whatever it's called over there, where the Soul King lives. They're over there at the royal capital of the Soul Society, and they're with all the different captains that are part of Squad Zero, and they're all learning lessons, getting better, recovering, and getting ready to meet the final person or the next step there, which is the one man that's considered to be the creator of the Sanpakutos. Which, again, talk about Tite Kubo being so good at tying loose ends.
Yeah.
Because this particular arc, more than anything, has been him tying up all loose ends. And not in a bad way. Like, he's literally taking all the different questions that I think most fans had but didn't know that they had. You know what I mean? And he's kind of like answering them in a very satisfactory manner. And I'm really excited as we discover. So we go to we already went to the super spa, right?
Yeah.
We went to the super buffet, where we did a lot more things than just eat, right? and then visual buffet, and then we went I couldn't help myself. And then suddenly now we're with this guy, which I kind of want to ask you, Isaac, because You probably know this more than I do, or can probably have a good idea of this more than I can. Who came first? The guy that makes Sanpakuto or Killer B in Naruto? Because I don't know, but I don't know if it's a trope of creating
I believe African
American characters that are constantly talking and rapping in anime. Like, it's a stereotype. It is. But at the same time, it's super interesting that two of the big three.
Right? I mean, Kubo is a good friend
with Masashi, Kisumoto.
Kisumoto.
They are
friends.
Apparently they found these things hilarious themselves. I mean, it's super interesting, you know? Like,
I mean, how should I put it? Both character has I don't know anyone that are against Killer B and or Bladesmith in general, so they have managed to probably create them and not just too big of a stereotype, if you catch my drift.
It's so interesting, the fact that not only do we meet the creator, we get the nice intro of him, and apparently he's surrounded by ladies, but all these ladies are Sanpakutos, so he treats his blades like women. But I like the idea that from the get-go, we have the sense that Sanpakutos are living beings, right? Or at least receptacles to become living beings in and of themselves, right? Which goes very on par with the idea that all soul reapers are one with their Sanpakuto, right?
Yeah.
And I do like the idea of him showing off the Sanpakutos, and you can see these ladies, they have these and they're all very different personalities and stuff like that. But also I like the fact that we get a very thorough and theoretical breakdown of how Sanpakutos come to be. And I found that very interesting. We learn that they are given to soul reapers in training, and they're giving these blades called Asaushis, which literally are in a way kind of like unalive swords. But as they go through arduous training, the Soul Reaper's spirit pressure goes into the blades, and it becomes a Shikai, and then it acquires its own identity, and the Shikai is the base Sanpakuto.
You can and say they connect with a sort of like an empty husk of a robot, and when they connect with that robot, their soul gets into that robot, and then they merge within that together, creating their Sanpakuto and their sword in general.
Right. So it makes all the sense in the world that the way everything is being presented, and I do find it super interesting that it is being presented that way. I do like the whole thing about the Sanpakutos. I love the way it's presented. I love how it's explained. I love how it makes so much sense. And I do like also how further on it kind of breaks down also Ichigo's process and how Ichigo indeed went through that process, even though it was like ridiculously fast forward. Because what is Ichigo if not a sponge of power and an ability of just racing past everybody in terms of how strong he is?
I mean
typical shonen main character, right?
Here I would argue that going into later episodes, it kind of makes sense why he is so incredibly powerful in comparison to everyone else. Yes. It's not yet sure. It's a lot of what's it called? Convenience mixed into one, but at the same time, it's not something that just comes out of the air, off mm-hmm. the ass or something.
Right.
I mean, honestly, shall I be completely honest? It just, while it did make sense, it doesn't... I take that once we come to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah, because I kind of also want to go... I want to talk the duality of the title battle because it there's a twofold meaning to the name of the episode, right? It's not just about Ichigo going into that room with Renji trying to find a new Asashi, right? Because not only do they give us the explanation of Asashi being that empty blade, and then you have the Shikai, which is the blade that's imbued by spirit pressure. You also know that the Shikai, with training, the Shikai then evolves into the next level, which is the Bankai, which is the transformation of where I would say the unity between the Soul Reaper and the Sanpakuto is even more defined, right? You get an explanation of all that. To then leave us with the bombshell that after 3 days, what is it, 3 days, I think it is, of them fighting all the Asashis, Renji was able to grab a new one, but Ichigo was not.
Exactly. And I remember when I saw it at first, I missed, wait, what? What?
And the interesting thing is, Renji has been training as a member of the Soul Society of the Sarate for all his life. So he knows who he is. He has a clear identity of what his role is and everything. And I found it powerful that Nimiya Oetsu, or whatever, Oetsu, which is the creator of the Sanpakutos, literally tells him, you cannot get a new Asashi because you don't know who you are. And I remember, I don't know if you remember, in the beginning of us covering Bleach, one of the first things that I mentioned to you was, I liked the idea when we started suspecting the Quincy heritage of Ichigo, right? When we started talking about it, I was talking about how I found it interesting that Ichigo's final arc in Bleach, he finally has a villain that's personal to him. You know what I mean? Like
Aizen is kind of personal also, if you really think about it, but not.
Well, that's the thing, though. You don't think that Aizen is personal until now.
Yeah, but because, I wouldn't.
Because now you know. Because remember, he wasn't... Ichigo fought Aizen to save the Soul Society and his friends. He didn't have like a personal stake in the matter, like someone that's directly linked to him, where it's a personal battle for him. You know what I mean? Like this is someone that's personal.
But now it is.
Correct. But that's what I found so interesting. And like you said, I agree with the Aizen thing, but I agree about it with what we know now, with the revelation of how far back he's involved in Ichigo's life. You know what I mean? That's how but that's something that Ichigo didn't know when he was fighting Aizen.
I'm going to mention something about Aizen when we come to that episode, but go on.
Oh, no. Trust me, we're going to. There's a lot of Aizen going around. And that's kind of like the episode ends. The episode ends with Ichigo having to leave the Soul Society, and he has to go back to Earth and try and figure it out, try and figure himself out. And then, of course, the next episode goes right into that. But that's the battle that Ichigo loses. He first loses the battle for a new Asashi because he doesn't know himself, because he has an internal battle of things that he doesn't want to accept and things that he doesn't understand. And he doesn't know who to ask or who to go see. So he needs to get his head right before he can fight. Which again, I think it's a very great move, especially with the type of truths that are dropped in the next three episodes. But before we go further, because of course we got to start with Ichigo, right? Before we go further and jump more into the whole reign of it all, right? we need to talk about the other side of the episode, the battle, which is the culmination of the fight between the Kenpachis, which we kind of all knew that Sauraki was going to win. We all knew that the way that was going to happen, it will mean that Unohana, one of the greatest healers of the Soul Society, would have to sacrifice her life. Like, these are things that we knew already, right? It's not a surprise. What I found most surprising is I did not know that when he became a captain or whatever, he was a freaking kid. I did not know this.
I mean, he's been strong for a while.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. That was an interesting surprise. And I find it interesting how, I don't know why, but I have a feeling that Sauraki Kenpachi, he's kind of like the tribute to Goku in this universe, because he gets stronger every time he gets defeated. So he's like a Saiyan. Every time he gets back up in a battle, he keeps unleashing more power and gets stronger, which, you know, that's the typical Saiyan physiology, right? That they all get stronger every time they recover. And that's kind of like the whole thing that happened with Kenpachi. With every recovery, because Unohana was harming him and was healing him at the same time, but he wouldn't have noticed, he kept unleashing more power. But then again, you have the whole side where he's always been strong. But the best thing that happens, apart from the heartbreak, that now he has to find who to fight because he doesn't have anyone that he can fight with, which again is kind of hilarious but interesting and perfect for the character. The one thing that we've never seen before is now a thing. Do you know what that is, Isaac?
I mean, there are a lot of things that are going on in Bleach, but
in this battle.
Not in particular.
Sauraki Kenpachi now has a Bankai.
And that's big in and of itself.
Yeah. And that's like, it's one of those things, like, we all dropped our mouths with how crazy it was when Yamamoto did his Bankai, right? But now it's like, we have seen Kenpachi fight throughout the years. And we've seen every single fight he's been in, to now go like, okay, he has a Bankai now. This is going to get nuts. So I really want to see him fight again now. Like, I'm really excited to see where he goes now. Like, I'm also very excited to see how Renji's new Sanpakuto is going to look like. Like, I'm very excited to where all this is going. So I think that battle ended very satisfyingly, and I don't know, I'm looking forward to it. That's pretty much what I have. When you first read the whole Kenpachi versus Kenpachi arc, what was your response? What was your thoughts?
Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. That's pretty much the entire... it's pretty much the entire arc in itself, even though some part is more... Yeah, that makes sense. In general, sort of like Quincy's being the last final villains, so to speak.
Yeah, I was not expecting them to be like the final villains. I mean, I'm not surprised that they are a major player, but I was not really expecting it to be like the final, like, you know what I mean? Like the final big bad. That was very surprising to me. So I don't know. It was one of those things that drew me to this story, because it's not just the fact that it is a group of people or a a type of character that has existed all the way from the beginning. I think that's what makes it the most dramatic, right? Because we know Quincy's exist or have existed forever. But we never knew the story behind the Quincy's and Soul Reapers. We only knew that it simply didn't get along. And to get all this story fleshed out like this is very terrifying, heartbreaking, and super interesting. Because it's like, if you thought you knew all the Bleach lore, like, you know what I mean? It was like that nice unveiling of stuff. Now, ready to jump into the meat and potatoes of the thing, Isaac?
And here I thought you were talking about some fish and chips.
No fish and chips. Meats and potatoes, buddy. So Ichigo leaves the Soul Society destroyed and like super sad. He meets up with Usagi, which he sees his old boss from the Fullbring arc. And, you know, he's trying to figure out what his next step is until his dad comes to see him. And did you remember the moment? To me, it's very fresh because I just read it like a couple of months ago. Do you remember the moment where Ichigo's dad wanted to tell him the story? Do you remember?
Yes.
Because it was funny, like, we could have known this story like years ago, but Ichigo was the one that said that he wasn't ready. And that was in the middle of the Aizen arc, which I found so interesting. Like, I actually like that, because the fact that they addressed the point that Ichigo's dad, because I forgot his name, so I'm going to keep saying Ichigo's dad. Ichigo's dad want him to know the story. It kind of makes this not come out of nowhere. Does that make sense? Like, that little seed that was planted there, like, there was this conversation that was going to happen in the future. I like that Tite Kubo was able to place that there in a way that was apparent, because it gives a lot more weight to the conversation now. Does that make sense? And it really, to me, it really heightens. Yeah. It puts Tite Kubo as a writer, like, up there. Those are the kind of things that, you know, whenever we read My Hero Academia and I'm like, Horikoshi is like amazing. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of those moments where Tite Kubo was like, buddy, well done. I like it. So now.
For the record, I don't know if you can, how you pronounce it, but it's Ichin Kurosaki, if I can read it right.
Ichin. Okay.
Ichin. It's I2S, and then H-I-N. Kurosaki.
I would say it's Ishin. So I'm going to ask you a question. So we know that he's a Soul Reaper. He has powers. So we know that he was a Soul Reaper at some point. At the first time that you saw him in Soul Reaper clothing, did you think that he was a Soul Reaper? Or like me, did you think that he was a substitute Soul Reaper at some point? What was your thought?
I mean, it kind of makes sense that he was a Soul Reaper. Or at least one of his parents had some soul reaper connection, because a living being, from what you could understand of the lore before you knew that about his dad, is that you can't just be a soul reaper randomly as a living human.
Right.
So it was either this was back then before. This old arc had started, that I find, I think it makes sense, kind of deal.
Yeah. Here's the question though. But the question, though, what do you think, that he was a regular Soul Reaper, or do you think that he was a substitute like Ichigo? Because I honestly thought that he was a substitute like Ichigo. And he's been hiding that forever. Like, that's kind of like how I saw it. And he just appeared now because things got more serious. You know what I mean?
No,
that's kind of how I viewed it.
Substitute because he got how should I put it? It felt like he had to, Ichigo was too powerful to be a son to a substitute in comparison. It just or maybe it was because how should I put it? It was just a gut feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it surprised me. Now, did it surprise you to find out that he wasn't just a Soul Reaper, that he was a freaking captain?
I'm seeing the strength of Ichigo, which he had already. No, not really.
See, the reason I'm not surprised that he was a captain, I mean, I was kind of surprised, but at the same time, it also makes sense, is because every single Soul Society person that has ended up on Earth was a captain, with the exception of the other Vizards. You know what I mean? Like part of the Vizards, you had what, three captains that were Vizards that were on Earth. Urahara was a captain. The guy that helps Urahara with the glasses, he used to be like a high priest or whatever. He wasn't a captain, but he was like a very important guy, right? So I'm not surprised that his dad was a captain, but it did throw me off the first time. But I do like the fact that even when they show him in the captain garb and the way that he goes about himself, he didn't feel like a different character. Does that make sense? Like he felt like, yes, because from the moment that we met him in the beginning, he's literally a comedic character that Ichigo likes to beat up. Like that's how we meet him in the beginning of the show. And I do
to
like
be the fair, all of the siblings like to beat up their dad.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
No, okay. What's the Karen like to do that, but what's the other sibling's name? Oh, I can't recall, but she is probably not the own.
Let me see. He has two sisters. It's Karen and Yusu.
No. Yusu.
Probably.
Yes. Let me check. Yusu, yes.
Yeah.
So she's the kinder of the two.
Yeah. But I do like the idea that he was a Soul Reaper and he was a high-ranking Soul Reaper. Now, the biggest surprise, I mean, there's a lot of surprises, right? I mean, the whole thing with his mother, now that we know that Ichigo was a Soul Reaper, I mean, ever since we saw Ichigo with the blue vein, we all pretty much knew that his mother had to be a Quincy. Like, there's no other way. Like, this particular episode doesn't really surprise us with that knowledge. What it really does, it just confirms it, right? Now, the surprising thing about the whole thing is that, which explains everything so clearly, is that she was betrothed to Uryu's dad. Like, it makes all the sense in the world, but I was not expecting that. But it makes sense with the idea that all the Quincys are dead because of the beginning of that Thousand-Year Blood War, when they first quasi-defeated Ewok. Quincy's live in hiding. Masaki doesn't have any more family, so he's staying with the Ishidas to pretty much be the next Ishida wife. That was like a big, like, what? I was not expecting that. I was not expecting it at all. And I was not expecting her to be a badass Quincy either. Like, you can kind of see where Ishigo gets his no bullshit thing when it comes to battles. It wasn't from Ishin. It was his mom.
Like mother, like son.
Yeah, like, that was fire. Like, when that particular hollow, the way she takes down the hollow, like, literally lets him get close just to literally give him a headshot. That was like, bro.
And it also, if you really think about it, explains his hollow's powers on top of all that.
So that's the whole thing. That's the one thing that was extra. But I don't want to talk about that yet, though. Who was there when the hollow attacked Ishii Aizen and Masaki? Fucking Aizen, bro. Like,
and you know what's so funny with Aizen?
Yeah.
The only reason why they didn't kill them when once they defeated that beast, if you really that hollow, if you really think about it, was pretty much him. Was curious if they would get together and get some kid and see the results of that. If you really think about it,
like he was playing low key devil the matchmaker, like it was I love how it all connects, and it doesn't. And the best thing about it, it doesn't feel that it comes out of nowhere. Anybody can watch these episodes and go back to the books, or go back to the previous episodes where Aizen talks about, I was there in the beginning, like, I know more about you than you think, and da 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 da. And he says all the things, and you're like, what? What is Aizen talking about? And Ishigo's kind of like saying, no. And like, and then you go like, holy shit, Aizen was right. Aizen wasn't wrong. Like, Aizen wasn't talking out of his ass. You know what I mean? Like that to me was very surprising. And brings so much validity of how great of an antagonist Aizen was, apart from the big middle finger that he gives to Ewok. like it's so funny. Even his hands are tied, you can still see Aizen give Ewok the middle finger.
And if you really if you go back at it, what did he do to him? He messed with Ewok's sense. He was able to mess with Ewok's senses. So he to the point that he believed that he were there in a shorter amount of time than really was. Aizen, there's a reason why Ewok was afraid of Aizen.
Yeah, and he wanted to recruit him too, but Aizen is like, I'm either in the front page or no page. I love Aizen. I like him more now with all these. Not plot holes, but, and it's funny because the best of stories are the stories where the author is able to fill in blanks that you as a reader didn't know that you needed them filled out. Does that make sense? Like, I didn't need Aizen to be there, but I love the fact that he made it a point for him to be there. And then everything in my mind just connects and go, oh shit. You know what I mean? Like, he's filling blanks that we didn't know. He's doing everything that I didn't know that I needed and I wanted. And I love it. So,
I believe it goes so far to say this, and I know that this is sacrilegious for some people, but Aizen is one of the examples of what I think the English dub is actually better than the sub. I think Kyle Herbert literally nails that character. I mean, he got an award for his role as Aizen. So
I'm gonna have to watch it now. I'm gonna have to go back and watch it with the dub to see how it sounds.
Kyle Burt, in case you don't know who it is, it's Gohan/Ryu from Street Fighter.
Interesting, and I like both of those characters. So this is gonna be very interesting to watch and be. The great Sosuke Aizen. Now,
and random fact, do you know who the English voice actor for Ichigo is?
Yeah, it's Johnny Yonbosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I did find it so funny that R Richard Epcar is the voice of Yvash. It's just that makes too much sense.
So we have the encounter, right? This particular episode is all about that first encounter, right? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not till episode 12 that we find out the truth of why Isshin is no longer a captain. It's not something as nefarious as Urahara having to leave the Soul Society because he discovers what Sosuke Aizen is doing, holifying Soul Reapers. And it's not that he chooses to flee to Earth to try and treat the ones that are later known to be the Vizards, right? It's not something as drastic. It's because upon patrol, or when he's trying to find Masaki to say thank you for saving his life, because Masaki literally saves his life, Masaki falls ill, but she doesn't have the cold. Because of the attack of that Hollow, she is suffering from hollowification. And now you have Urahara. Ryuzu is the name of Uryu's dad? Something like that.
What did you say?
The name of Uryu's dad. What was the.
Ishin.
No, of Uryu's dad. Uryu's.
Oh.
I think it's Ryuzu or something like that. He is Ryuken. Ryuken Ishida.
Ryuken.
So is there's you have Ryuken, Isshin, Masaki on the floor, and Urahara in the same place. And it's funny how every time something goes wrong, everybody's at Urahara's. Like that's like the place. Like there has to be like a
I mean,
mini-series of people just in the Urahara's workshop.
I mean, he is the, I should put it, he is sort of like the, I can fix it guy. Kind of, he's
Yeah.
the, I would almost call him an MacGuffin on that regard.
Yes, he has evolved to a Magusim-like character. I have to agree with you on that. Now, I do find it interesting and great that her particular situation was very different because Soul Reaper and Queen Sea abilities are not the same. They don't work the same. So, because they don't work the same, the fact that she was hollowifying and there was a hollow inside of her trying to eat her up from the inside, Urahara couldn't do the same thing that he was doing with the visors to heal them. He needed to do something different. So she needed to be injected with he. So what he found out, he was using Quincy. So originally, the way he cured the visors, which I find is super interesting, he used Quincy spiritual pressure with the hollow spiritual pressure to save the visors. So now he needed a Soul Reaper and a Soul Reaper power in it, but because she had Quincy abilities, that made it even more difficult. And that's why literally Isshin has to make the decision to sacrifice his freedom to become, to literally become
A human.
the medicine
Yeah.
that Masaki needs. And Ryuken's face of despair was so powerful. And it's funny because when you meet the maid in the house, the first thing you think about is Uryu.
Yeah.
So it all makes sense, like how Uryu came to be. Not necessarily, I don't know, man. It's how all this was planned was so great. Like it definitely feels like this is one of those stories that Tite had to have written a lot of this beforehand and then gone back to the beginning. You know what I mean? Like he knew what the story want he knew what the story that he wanted to tell what he wanted it to look like. And then he worked his way to the war, which is great.
There's too many details.
Yeah. Many details.
And so, I have to. I don't know if you remember, but those two dads have some weird respect for each other during the series, even if.
No, and that's the one thing though. Like, I was very surprised when I found out that Ichin and Ryuken know each other. Yeah. You find this out when Uryu goes to Hueco Mundo in the Aizen arc. That's mostly the Espada arc. I'm very surprised. And now I know why. Like, on one side, it's like, because you took my girl, but in reality is you saved my girl. You know what I mean? You saved the person that I wanted to be with. But, of course, it wasn't meant to be. Because you can definitely tell that Masaki and Ishii were meant for each other, whether there was a hollow in the middle or not. You know what I mean? Like, they have that chemistry. And I love how happy the story goes. I love how it develops. I love how they get together. They talk about the kids. I love how it's explained that the holification condition, Masaki's going to pass it on to her children. Like, so I, which leads me to the thought, like, if Karin and Yuzu ever become fighters like Ichigo, they are in danger of holifying. Yeah. Which it's so interesting, and it makes all the sense in the world. And now it goes back to the whole thing about Ichigo has a little bit of all three parts. Literally, he has parts of Hollow, parts of Quincy, and part of Soul Reaper, which makes him extremely unique amongst everyone. And that's the one thing that I love about the Ichigo character, because I never expected this kind of evolution, because we always knew that Ichigo was different, but every time we found someone different, after a little while, we found someone that was just like him and better at it. You know what I mean? Like when he started holifying and whatever, we were all scared for him because he was going to be a monster. And then we find out, oh, wait, there's a bunch of people that have masks and they do it better than Ichigo. You know what I mean? Like, also the idea that the hollow that appeared inside of Masaki's soul looks exactly like the Vasta Lordis that Ichigo becomes when he's fighting Ukiura. Did you notice that?
Yeah, and it makes so much sense.
Yep. So the idea that Ichigo indeed is unique, because there's no one else that's all three things in one. It also solidifies what I always thought of Ichigo. Like, Ichigo is the bridge among all the worlds. And it makes sense because he is part Soul Reaper. So he gets together with the Soul Reapers. He's part Quincy now, which explains the weird relationship he's always had with Uryu. And it explains, and he's part Hollow, which also talks about how he never judges the Hollows and the Aronkars, except those he fights. You know what I mean? So I like the idea of him being that person that brings everyone together in an interesting fashion. Ichigo's... Mike, for those listening, Mike pops in the chat and says, Ichigo is the goat. The goat!
I don't disagree. I mean, one of his themes, his theme song is literally number one, so...
Such a great song. So good. Now, so Ichigo knows his truth now, right? But not only does he know what happened with Masaki, he finds out why she died. And this was like, my reaction was, it's I don't want to say it, but it's like if I didn't like Ewok before, now I'm like, fuck this guy. You know what I mean? Like, because we found out that he's responsible for his mom's death. When you first read this, how'd you feel?
Well, as I stated before, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. But then I walked back a couple of seconds and just, yeah, that makes sense.
See, but to me, it doesn't make sense at all. But then again, it does make sense, the reason. But I'm like, what I found it very interesting is the fact that Uryu's mom also died the same day. And apparently a bunch of other Quincy's died the same day. Because it's funny how we go back to the rhyme at the beginning of the show, at the beginning of the series, where it says, in 1,000 years, the king regained his body or something. And 100 years, he regains his death. And 9 more, you know, that whole rhyme or whatever. And the fact that it was playing out that way, it was just crazy. The fact that not only is this a very personal antagonist for Ichigo because he is somewhat related to him. This person is literally directly connected to his mom's death. Because he made the decision that she wasn't worthy of the Quincy abilities that she had anymore. And that's how she died. That to me was heartbreaking. But it also allows Ichigo to focus, to return to the Soul Society, to try again to find an Asauchi, because now he knows who he is. I don't know, these last two episodes where we get the whole story are so meaningful and so powerful. And I love when, because you know, you can have exposition and it just be information drop. But the idea that the exposition allows the characters that you love to grow exponentially. You know what I mean? Like, this was great. Because Ichigo is at a different level now. He's in a different understanding now. But also, now he has a new height in terms of power to be able to get. Which is so great. So great. Anything else on these episodes before we go to the last one?
No, not what I can think of.
Now, he knows who he is. He knows the truth of his mother. He knows the truth of himself. So now, he returns to the Soul Society to get his new Asauchi. And Isaac, does it take him long to get it?
Oh, hell no, it doesn't. He basically walks in there and majority of them bows before him and he just walks directly to him and he goes, holy shit, this is a different situation.
Yes, it was one of those things like he was 100% in control of the situation. That to me was like, holy crap. Well, you got to think about this also. He's probably the strongest being in existence to a degree now because he has 3 power sources, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, at least one of the strongest.
Yeah. I wonder why this is like, because I don't know if you remember, but there's this short scene where one of the Royal Guard, the big fat captain, the one with the beard that looks like Santa Claus, he's talking to the Soul King and he says, like, I hope you awake, because like he kind of notices and acknowledges that the Soul King finds Ichigo interesting. So I kind of want to see where this goes.
And if the Soul King finds something interesting, then it's pretty big.
So something that I was not expecting happens, but at the same time, well, actually, I don't want to say I wasn't expecting it, but it makes all the sense in the world. It's one of those moments like when you say Isaac, it makes perfect sense. The first, so he has the Asaoshi. He goes to the Forge, which, again, we meet all these crazy characters that apparently are living tools, right? Yeah. And it's all hilarious. It's all anime Bleach goodness. But then the captain that makes the Sanpakuto says, it's time to say goodbye to Sangetsu.
Yeah.
And then we have the whole season. And I don't know, it's been a long time since we've seen an internal conversation between Sangetsu and Ichigo. But of course, one of the biggest thing that the opening teases is that there's definitely a correlation between Sangetsu and Ewok.
And the whole conversation confirms it.
Yeah. And all this time, old man Sangetsu, which has been advising him or training him or whatever, it's been Ichigo's Quincy powers manifesting into Sangetsu. So Ichigo's Quincy presence has been trying to prevent Ichigo from being a Soul Reaper in Hollow all his life. And he's been fighting all this time with a fraction of his ability because his Quincy powers have been holding him back. And that is something that's kind of crazy.
And yes, you have just only fought with a fraction of your power. And I'm just reading that and just, excuse me? Fraction?
Yep. But at the same time, it makes sense when you take in consideration how strong Ewok is, right? Yeah. And that he's deeply connected to Ewok now. But what I find surprising also is that it's very typical megalomaniac villain speech, right? Where they see themselves as the good guy as they're cutting the other guy's head. You know what I mean? So like you have this Sangetsu Ewok character now talking with like a paternal speech, right? Like he's talking him with love, with care. Like, I didn't want you to get hurt. I didn't want you to go into battle, but you insisted, so I helped. So is this? Are we supposed to believe that he's no longer going to have Quincy powers, or is that, or that he's releasing the lock, so now Ichigo can explore them? I kind of feel that's what's happening.
It's releasing the lock.
Yeah. Now, here's the one thing that I don't understand, or kind of be a bummer, but the whole thing where Ewok says, oh, these persons are not worthy of Quincy powers and just takes him away, is that a one-time thing? Or, I mean, if you know the answer, I know you're not going to say anything, but like, he can easily take Ichigo's Quincy powers then, but he chooses not to.
No comment.
Ah, damn you. But yeah, that's the kind of question that I'm asking myself. But then again, even if his Quincy powers go away, he still has his Hollow and Soul Reaper powers. But I do find interesting that all this conversation, the fact that we get this, all this interesting insight and exposition into Old Man Sangetsu and Ichigo thanking him. Like, he's able to make the distinction between this part of Ewok and the actual Ewok, which I find it very interesting. And it's actually a very Ichigo thing to do. You know what I mean? Like, Ichigo, he always finds a way to understand those that he fights. So he kind of understands how Old Man Sangetsu was trying to look out for him, even though he was kind of also fighting with the enemy. Does that make sense? So I did find that to be a very interesting way of saying goodbye to that version of the character. And I kind of want to see now how the talking to the Sanpakuto goes for Ichigo. how that's going to develop into something new. Because if Old Man Sangetsu is no longer there, I wonder how it's going to look now. So, if it's going to still be seen the same way, or is he just going to talk to the Blade? Or he doesn't need to anymore because, again, like the episode says, the Blade is me. So, I don't know, man. Do you have anything else on this episode? Because apart from the fact that he walks out of the forge with two Sanpakutos, which is like...
Don't forget also, he evaporated the entire ocean when he draws them.
Oh, and by the way, as the credits are rolling and he's doing the final thing, because he needed to imbue his spiritual pressure on it, when he puts it on there, they're playing... Like, they're playing the song again. It's like, okay, yeah, buddy. Ichigo's back, baby. I love how this show celebrates the characters.
It's like him going Ultra Instinct.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I kind of want to see now. I can't wait to see him do his Bankai. Because if his... Sanpakuto is two blades. I kind of want to see where it goes from there. I want to know what the name of the blade is. I want to know what the abilities are. Because I wonder if he's still going to have the Getsuga Tensho. Or maybe he has something different. I don't know. I'm very curious to see where it goes.
But this particular
episode is pretty cut and dry, right? It's mostly about the awe factor. Which, again, is the perfect way to... close out the first core, right? But that wasn't the last scene of the episode, right? What was the last scene of the episode, Isaac?
We have this is getting even more personal, doesn't it?
Yes, because out of nowhere, we are present in Ewok's throne room, and the lieutenant presents a new candidate to join the Waldenreich, and that candidate is none other than Uryu Ishida. Uryu has joined the Waldenreich. Now, this is one of the best cliffhangers we could have ever gotten, because what a great cliffhanger. If you've seen the trailer for part two, for core two, which is called The Separation, it's, you see a lot of questioning and battling between Uryu and Bleach. Like, that's going to be like the big theme of the next core, right? Like, Ichigo finding out that Uryu has joined them. Now, I don't know why, but part of me wants it to be the standard bait and switch. And what I mean by that, part of me wants it to be that Uryu joined him to spy on him. And not that he joins them. But if he joins them, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt a lot. So I don't know if I can wait till I think I'm going to read the manga. I don't know if I can wait, Isaac. I need to know now.
Lost in manga.
Oh, boy. But yeah, this was a great finale for Core 1. I can't wait for Core 2 to come up. This is the greatest comeback of any show that I have ever seen. For anything. You know, like, what a great comeback. Bleach is like Bleach never left. And I'm here for it. I am here for all of it. Isaac, do you have anything else on the finale of Core 1 of Bleach, the final year Blood War? The thousand
Bleach
year Blood
is
War.
Back, baby!
Are you excited for anything in particular? Are you
That would be spoilers for anime only.
Ah, damn it. I hate it when you're right. So, guys, that's it. Those are our thoughts on Bleach, The Thousand Year Blood War, Core 1, the finale. We spoke episode 10, The Battle, episode 11, Everything But Rain, episode 12, Everything But Rain, June Truth, and we closed up with episode 13, The Blade Is Me. If you love our coverage of all the animes that we do, not just Bleach, but also Chainsaw Man, My Hero Academia, and all of that, if you love what we do here, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, click on the like button, and click on the bell for notifications so you do not miss any single episode or coverage of any of the animes that we do. Coming soon, we have a new episode on My Hero Academia manga, the last three chapters. We are covering Nier Automata next week. We're doing our season 6 core 1 review of My Hero Academia. Also, we're doing a season 1 core 2 review of Spy Family. So we have a lot of stuff coming soon. If there's any shows that you guys want us to cover, let us know in the comments below or let us know on Twitter at The Amateur Otaku Pod. If I can find the right banner, I can probably put it on there, and it's there. Find us on Twitter at The Amateur Otaku Pod. If you want to listen to us on the go, we're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, where all podcasts are found. But we're excited to talk anime with all of you guys. Thank you for those that joined us in the last minute join of the live stream. Thank you for joining us, those that did. And I hope you guys enjoyed the Bleach talk. And we can't wait to talk even more Bleach when it comes back in July. Now, I want to put that out there, Isaac. This was unplanned, but I'm going to put it out there. If you guys want us to cover any of the Bleach movies, let us know which one's the best and which one should we cover. And we'll cover.
Oh, I know a few.
So we can talk some awesome Bleach in between cores. So let us know what you guys want us to cover and what we should cover. Now, Isaac, if people wanted to find you, my brother, where can people find you?
Written work, Wilbum Entertainment, and social media, Twitter.
And you can find me at TheScarletFan52 on Twitter. Have it awesome, guys. Keep reading anime. Keep watching manga. Keep being awesome. Take it easy, guys. Peace.
Peace.